Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, we're diving right into the 12th Malaysia Plan.
First, we're running through what the plan covered. Then, is it enough to set us on the path to economic recovery? Finally, inclusivity was a big promise. Did the plan deliver?
So we want to know, what did you think of the 12th Malaysia Plan? Are you impressed? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:09. Are you tired of hearing us say the word plan yet? So I do apologize. We're going to keep going because today, of course, the 12th Malaysia Plan was tabled in the Dewan Rakyat by the Prime Minister. And this five-year plan for 2021 to 2025 is themed a prosperous, inclusive, sustainable Malaysia. That is its theme. That is also its slogan, tagline. Is that fair to say?
I mean, I think that's what it's couched as I said earlier. It is a little bit of a mouthful, but that's what it's supposed to embody, I think.
So I just wanted to say this, and then we can get into the focuses, but a lot of money has gone into and will be kind of exiting this plan, I suppose, and that is 400 billion ringgit. That's been allocated to existing and new development projects.
And I think development really is... a huge push. It's a word that got said a lot. And of course, I think quite naturally so, given that we are in this sort of road to recovery from the pandemic, right? So the PM described this 12th Malaysia plan as being a holistic one, and that they would focus on nine main areas. Some of those include resetting the economy as well as restoring growth momentum. He also talked about eradicating poverty, closing the income gap, enhancing socioeconomic development in Sabah and Sarawak, increasing the efficiency of public services and effective policy implementation. This includes digitalization. A lot of focus also given on advancing green growth, also reducing greenhouse emissions and so on. And finally, empowering the Bumiputra and the Malaysian family agenda.
In one sentence, in one sentence, no contrast whatsoever, just putting it out there. I think like you said earlier as well, before we started the show, a lot of this sounds good, right? You know, for a country that's trying to set on the path to not just recovery, but also actual growth, looking at economy, eradicating poverty, trying to ensure that no one gets left behind, right? Keeping an eye on inclusivity. All these things sound good. I think where we really need to look at is going to be the more granular stuff, how exactly these goals are going to be achieved and what manner of accountability or accounting are we going to have for what is going to set us on this path and how to assess how well we're actually doing.
Yeah, and I think if you break down that idea of inclusivity, though, that's where things start getting perhaps a little bit more complex, because it's one thing to say inclusivity, but I don't think everyone will necessarily view some of these things that fall under that as fulfilling that entirely. And of course, you pointed out that the juxtaposition of the Malaysian family on the one hand, but also a very clear and even worded Bumiputra agenda on the other. So they did talk about new initiatives that will be introduced to improve Bumiputra business, the fact that the Bumiputra agenda will be empowered. And I think also in line with that, the fact that there are initiatives and sort of policy measures talked about for other groups, but they're very much in line with ethnicity. So, you know, there are initiatives for low-income Chinese households, there are initiatives for low-income Indian households. And then he also talked about Orang Asli households as well as the B40 community, all of which, just to say, I'm not saying that these aren't necessary, but I'm saying couching them in that way sort of is an interesting approach when you're talking about, again, that umbrella Malaysian family.
I mean, at the very least, it doesn't acknowledge, I think, perhaps, it doesn't acknowledge how sensitive and sensitized many Malaysians are to hearing things being broken down according to race. Because if you look at exactly what's being introduced, right, they're not bad things. Indian households, skill training, targeted financial assistance. For Chinese households, it's improved access to special loan schemes for residents of new villages. So I think it's hard, right? Because on the one hand, we want specificity from the government. It's something you always say when you provide aid and the like, to who and for what, right? What is this based on? Who have you been talking to? Did they say that they want this? So on the one hand, it's great to see that level of specificity. On the other hand, it's a little bit... it's a little bit problematic, I think, to always hear everything from the government, especially aid, I think, being framed within a sort of racialized structure. And that can be quite difficult to brain, especially when in the next breath it's like, keluarga Malaysia. Yeah. You're like, okay, I'm not sure. The PM did also say that since Bumiputra corporate equity shares haven't reached the targeted minimum of 30%, they're introducing a safety net framework, which means essentially that the sale of Bumiputra shares and companies can only be offered to other Bumiputra companies, consortiums or individuals. We're going to be getting into all this in a little while. But like we said, the 12 Malaysia plan, quite broad and with 9 main areas, focusing on economic recovery, focusing on inclusion, focusing on bolstering our healthcare systems, of course. We'd like to know, what do you think of the plan? Are you impressed? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be getting a sort of overview of it from Iskandar Fariz, Communication Director at REFSA. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:16 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're focused today on the 12 Malaysia plan. And first up, we are going to get an overview of sorts because it is a very wide, very broad plan. And it's something that we would need more than an hour to cover really in significant detail. But we do also need to get the broad strokes of it. So we'd like to know, what do you think of the 12th Malaysia plan? Are you impressed by it? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to talk about this is Iskandar Fariz, Communications Director at REFSA. Iskandar, always good to have you with us.
Hello, Trillin. Hello, Sharmila. Good to be here again.
So first things first, what do you make of the plan? What were you anticipating? Did it meet your expectations?
Okay, so REFSA released this wish list of 8 items. I think it's a bit hard to go through 8 of them here, but I'll just give a summary version of what we think. So the plan highlights a number of areas that everyone agrees on, but at the same time, it somehow omits some things that we would have liked to see in there. Some notable buzzwords we can hear from the PM today, such as the green economy, digital economy, blue economy, and some talk about care economy as well. They get the usual mentions. As an initial response today, before pouring through the whole document, the 500 document, maybe a more thorough analysis will come soon. But as an initial response, I'd actually like to see more elaboration and how the government intends to make Malaysia more resilient towards future pandemic. He did mention that he wants to see Malaysia be Kali's pandemic of future proof against pandemic, but there needs to be a thorough reflection of lessons from the past 18 months. That should serve as a valuable guidelines for this purpose. For example, many of the problems we faced during the pandemic response time was that there was poor decision-making due to coordination or in miscoordination between the decision-makers. So how then, in a plan, how do you make sure that this does not reoccur or recur in the future? Because let's be honest, that this is not the last pandemic that we'll see. We'll see more crises, more pandemics in the future. Experts internationally have said that COVID is just one of the many crises that we'll face. We'll face various versions of coronavirus. We'll face other crises like the climate change, so on and so forth. So how then will we improve our inter-ministerial coordination and also the different government departments and also society's response towards this existential threat? So this is important so that if we were to face any potential crisis, we won't dilly-dally, we won't take our time, sweet and precious time. We are prepared and not caught off guard. Since we are dealing with people's lives and livelihoods, any missteps or delays would be dire, especially for the people's well-being.
So you mentioned buzzwords, right? Now, the Prime Minister did describe the 12th Malaysia Plan as, amongst other things, transformational, as having game-changing and radical initiatives. Do you think that the contents of the plan align with that description?
Not particularly transformational in a way that is a new idea, because let's be honest, as mentioned, a lot of what has been discussed was agreed upon before, and I think have been talked about, and then part of the discourse in the public sphere. For example, the need to work on education, that's no surprise there. Everyone knows that there is a lost generation due to COVID, and there needs to be a radical change. So I think that maybe because the short time of nature to explain or explain the whole idea, but there's still not enough bullets or emphasis given on how do we catch up to 2 years of lost education. So these are immediate term, although the plan is a long-term plan, but given that the immediacy of the challenge, the urgency of the challenge, children has lost two or more years from COVID, and we don't see it coming to normal anytime soon. So that is itself a grand challenge that needs to be faced, to be managed. And we don't, not to mention how to eradicate hardcore poverty. Recently, there are news that talks about 500,000 above households have slipped from M40 to B40. So how do we address that? So these issues, I think, wasn't touched upon in depth. Maybe in high level ways. So in the next few days, we might see more discussion into it. So it's not clear how these targets will be met. So can't really say it's transformational, but it's still early days. I hope the deliberation throughout the parliamentary process will unveil all this. We will get to see more inputs and discussion points from the document.
So one thing that seems to be striking a nerve, what do you make of the focus on, you know, the Bumiputra agenda, despite also coming hand in hand with an emphasis on Keluarga Malaysia?
So, I mean, the Bumiputra agenda will, in reality, in political reality, it will still be part of the government's initiative or narrative, given some more that the current government is a PN/BN government, so it needs to stick with its core credentials. But having said that, also, while some gains we've achieved from Bumiputra affirmative actions, unintended consequences arose because of the policy fixating on equity ownership targets. But somewhat, they neglect the core goals of empowerment and capacity building. Because of this, there was no prospect or incentive for the beneficiaries to graduate from their dependency on affirmative action policies. Furthermore, the over-focus on equity targets make it a contentious, emotive issue, because many interpreted owning equity as owning parts of the country. People will say some community own this part of the business while some others don't. So it is a very divisive framing. So politicians and I think the society as a whole needs to move away from a zero-sum game, which where when we talk about some will win, others will lose. But talk about empowerment, because empowerment is different. As the tide rises, all boats rise with it. So there is a need to re-look at this discussion of how we help each other, kita jaga kita, in terms of empowerment.
How do you think this plan will be received politically?
There's still time to deliberate, and I think there are points where people can find common ground. And Dewan Rakyat will deliberate the plan until 7th of October, so that gives time to discuss and go back and forth on the details and the themes of it. But I hope whatever it is, the government is open to any feedback and incorporate some inputs from the other sides, be it the opposition or independent, the PH or the independents. because there is this COVID has ushered this era of no government knows best. So it's time for a consultative approach towards decision making, let alone a budget as long term as this one.
So the Prime Minister has said that Malaysia is expected to be a high-income, high-tech country by 2025 under this plan. Based on where we're at the moment, is this realistic?
So if we use the definition of World Bank, Malaysia's GDI per capita is already over 90% of the level needed to hit that threshold. And assuming pandemic recovery and a return to pre-pandemic growth conditions, plus all the reforms tutored in the Tuan Malaysia plan. So it's going to be in line, but like plus minus a few years. But however, I would caution on using that gauge as a mark of success or not, because as we know, multiple considerations are needed. We can't measure success based on income levels per se, because some people can do better, some people can do worse, based on just the national average income. We need to talk about distribution of wages, distribution of wealth, distribution of income, the happiness index, the human development index, multidimensional poverty index. There are many gamut of statistics and data points that we need to consider. High income nation status is not just the golden status that we need to achieve by 2025.
Now, one of the 9 aspects of the plan is to restructure government departments to reduce bureaucracy, which does seem ambitious. Are you optimistic that this will be achieved? Will there be pushback or opposition to this?
I think the hope or the ambition is... We need to give credit to having that in the document, but I it's hard to see how the government is going to navigate this gargantuan challenge. In terms of we can take for instance the point of holding on to centralizing power. So COVID-19 has ushered this scenario where an all-knowing, all-powerful government might not get it right, because there is no one-size-fits-all policy solutions. So if there is a move towards restructuring the public service delivery system, there's also a need to restructure or devolve power from the center to the multiple levels of government, be it state or local government. Right now, people experience policy at the local level. So while it's commendable that they have pushed this as an agenda, but the lack of mention of decentralization is also one thing. How do we face future pandemics where the impact of the pandemic or crisis is different in each region, in each locality, but you still want to dictate from Putrajaya? So I think that is the downside of what we see today in the plan. And I hope due considerations will be given to rethink the way policymaking is done in this country.
Iskandar, unfortunately, we're out of time with you, but thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That was Iskandar Fariz, Communications Director at REFSA, giving us an overview of sorts of some of the main takeaways of the 12th Malaysia Plan that was tabled today in Parliament. It will be debated tomorrow. We're going to keep covering it. But in the meantime, what do you make of the plan? Are you impressed? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Build Fairer Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila, and today we are diving into the 12th Malaysia Plan. So earlier we had an overview really of some of the main takeaways from the plan itself. Now we want to look into the economics of it all, which is of course a hugely important component of it. Before that though, we've been asking you for your thoughts. How do you feel about the plan? Are you impressed? Not so much, perhaps. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we go to our next guest, I think we have time for a couple of messages.
So Patrick says, we've been working on the same agenda since the beginning of the Malaysia plans. They are important, but I think it's time to ask ourselves, why haven't they been achieved all these years? Is the method suitable? Do the people who work on the plan understand the core problems of our nation? Economy plans are not only about money, it's about the structural foundation of the way our society is built. Now, to be fair, Patrick, I think we can't say nothing worked. But part of the problem is that we don't necessarily know what worked and what didn't, and that's what we've been saying.
I think also this idea of developing different approaches depending on the challenges of the time, as opposed to necessarily kind of trying out similar things but rebranding it more so than actually being what is the word, game changing or radical,
which are transformational,
which are some of the terms that were used in the speech itself. I also wanted to look at this message from an anonymous listener who said, yeah, I would prefer to hear specifics, action plans that I can understand, like how many jobs increasing in which sector? Is it industrial? Is it agriculture? Is it IT? What can we expect within the next 6 to 12 months? Because there's so many of us who are still struggling and don't know whether we can pay next month's grocery or utility bills. So to tell me that the government aims to push the average income up to 10,000 is rather remote. Is it going to be that because we have to take into consideration inflationary impact? Somehow, the template used for planning the budget still seems rather yesterday. And it is a fair amount of that we're planning to get into. Joining us now to discuss that 10K figure and so much more is Kor Yew Ling, political economist at Sergi & Arm Advisors. Yew Ling, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Lynn. Hi, Sharmila.
So a clear desire there for people to have, for us to have better benchmarks to understand, I think, how things have done in the past. So before we look at this new plan, what are your thoughts on how well the 11th Malaysia plan was ultimately executed, particularly when we factor in the pandemic?
Well, the 11th Malaysia plan measured up to 2020. So the pandemic coming in from March of that year had an impact. But the shortfall on things like GDP growth was already pretty much baked in pre-pandemic. The government reports itself 2.7% per year GDP growth for 2016-2020 versus the target of 4.5 to 5.5. So even without the pandemic, the scorecard indicator fell rather short. Another indicator is the still favored GNI, which basically includes foreign income. And that came in at ringgit 42,500 versus 47,700. So that's 89% of the target. You know, this includes Malaysians trading things through Singapore, Petronas overseas income. But, you know, these things, these economic benefits are really not felt by many Malaysians. So I think GDP per capita should also be given more prominence, but it hasn't this round.
Resetting the economy really was a major theme, right, in this plan. Now, does the plan check enough of the boxes in terms of having strategies that would clearly address the socioeconomic issues that the country is facing?
Well, I think the reset is a very big word and would imply, I think to me, and I think many people as well, I hope, that it implies fundamental changes. But if you look at the reset chapter, it seems to cover too many microeconomic or sub-sectoral targets. So maybe they're just putting in things which are achievable, I guess. I mean, I suppose that's a slightly cynical read, sorry. But what do Malaysian businesses from small to big talk about? You know, they talk about policy U-turns and uncertainties, cartels, competition problems, lack of open tenders, a mass of agency and task forces that tend to sow confusion and where only the connected can know how to get hold of grants and other goodies. So these are the fundamentals, and I fear that was a little bit lacking in the reset chapter. And also, if we look at it for Malaysians, there is a question of the share of foreign versus domestic. So this is, in a way, a very old economic problem. You know, during the colonial times, there was this concept of a dual economy where the foreign sector was high-paying or it took up a lot of jobs, but the domestic sector was lagging. So the fear is locals being stuck in a low value added rut, and maybe more could have been done on the reset chapter for this.
We read a couple of messages earlier, and in there, there was also this desire to see some newness, some freshness, I think, in the approaches taken. From your perspective, if we broaden it out to the plan as a whole, are there initiatives that stood out as being unexpected or that suggest that this administration is thinking about economic recovery in an innovative way?
There is an emphasis on the inclusiveness, as well as on sustainable development, but it does kind of look as though it's more talk and fewer indicators for that. Perhaps what people might be chattering a bit more about, quite focused on the Bumiputra policy, is quite heavily sharpened here. And arguably, I think not unexpected, given the way the political economy has been evolving in the last couple of years. So the quick reactions has really been on this aspect of it. But other than that, the overall plan has a lot of continuities.
So what are some ongoing problems that the plan doesn't address?
Well, putting on again a critic's hat, and I hope other people will opine on it as well. What about the issue of big corruption? What about the question of too many mega projects, the lack of transparency and accountability, and the strength of the democracy? I think on the positive sign of it is there is this MOU going on with some of the political parties and the ruling coalition. So will this presage, for instance, a robust economic and policy discussion at Parliament where there's going to be live telecasts and witnesses and you know, business association having open discussions there. This will be something positive to see if this political MOU can benefit the wider economy.
One major goal is to reach a GDP growth rate of between 4.5 and 5.5%. Do you see this as achievable, and what would go into making this happen?
Well, given that the last plan, which majority was pre-pandemic, it does look tough going to then put this for the next 5 years. Obviously, there's a hope for a bounce back, but so are other economies doing so. And 2021 is pretty much a lost year. We're nearly done with it. While we can be hopeful for 2022, I think COVID and the new strains have proven harder to live with. The protocols and measures are still looking uncertain. We need to develop and evolve those in the next couple of months and really test them out. It looks as though it's a test and try and then go back to drawing board. I think we're seeing that down south as well as elsewhere. So are foreign and domestic investors confident to pump money into Malaysia? That's the ultimate question. There is competition from abroad. We have to be really cognizant of that, notably from neighbouring countries. We don't have to worry about too far apart as well, because we are looking at regionalisation. But can we stand up against the likes of Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia to attract investments? And one thing that also puzzles me a bit is that the plan eyes private-public investments. That's a good thing, because our financial situation, at least the public finances, is not very flexible. It needs help. But there is a huge emphasis on infrastructure and a massive development expenditure of ringgit 400 billion. And this compares to ringgit 260 billion in the last plan. So that's a big jump up. And I think what the economy is looking for is immediate income. Whereas if you put in a lot of infra, that's sort of spending a lot of money and then hoping for the returns to come through. So, you know, how will this big step up in project deals, how will this be funded? This approach is not new. We saw this in previous plans, and we've already seen that this infra-driven approach has, in a way, been part of this coming up short package. So we need to be careful that we don't focus on the infra-property nexus that really gooses up short-term numbers, but this, how much stays in Malaysia and how much really trickles down from this kind of thing. We don't want white elephant cost burdens. We've already had a tough time through the pandemic. We need things that really trigger an income boost. You know, we don't want overpaid, overspecced, etc. We need real economic multipliers. Do these things pay for themselves and not adding on to financial strain as it is?
So I wanted to touch it on one specific aspect of this, right, which is that 10,000 ringgit average income per household by 2025. What is the current average, and what do you make of this goal?
Well, I'm taking the figure in the report is ringgit 7160. So 10,000 looks like a 40% increase. But I agree. I think you read out one of the comments. I think this is inclusive of inflation as always. So if we back out Malaysia's favorite headline inflation rate of about 3% per annum, and we bake that in, then just inflation alone should take us to 8,003. So then the real increase is 8,003 to 10,000. So that's 1,700 ringgit or 20%. So it's not a 40% increase. Let's take it as a 20% real increase to be done over 4 years. So it doesn't look like such a huge leap up if you consider that 2021 is a washout. But let's see, once we consider the nominal terms, whether we can achieve 5. So we're going back to that whole GDP 5, right? So household income 5 as well. So it's all kind of matched up.
And I suppose all of which to say, did the plan leave you feeling optimistic? Did the plan leave you feeling as if it is going to set us on some path of recovery for our economy and of growth?
It feels some positive words with sustainability on these things, but maybe more needs to be fleshed out on that. There's cost implications, but are the income opportunities well developed? Because what I do worry about is the copy and paste items from the last plan. There's a bit much of it, I feel. If we want to see obvious signs for wage increases, we really need minimum wage to go up. This would trigger other wages to go up. Obviously, businesses and many people would like to see that it is productivity driven. So can we get further clarity? I know the government does report it, but maybe it has to be a lot more prominent. What is productivity driven investments, both from domestic and foreign? And what is for Malaysians, frankly, for them, is what's the foreign labour share? Because this would ultimately need to reduce with a push under productivity-driven growth. So the one of the other targets and signposts would be a reduction on that so that more domestic-oriented could have this increase. And what about the government looking carefully at infrastructure and property? Because we've had this tail-wagging problem, right? I mean, infrastructure is supposed to be an enabler. Property is something that you do when you can afford it. But we need to be careful about how much emphasis and goes there. I think digital is something that's a bit ongoing as well, and it may be boosted up further. But just as we can have too many physical toll road highways, we have to be careful that the digital highway isn't full of white elephants too, that we end up having to steer around and worry about and being overburdened about high costs there. So I think transparency and efficiency and fair charges are really needed. We don't want all economy and, you know, I'm sorry, a bad word, but cartel mentality to commandeer what is new in the economy on the digital sustainability and other fronts. So if the administration can be careful on these fronts, I think we should have more positive signs.
Yu Ling, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Kaw Yu Ling, political economist at Sergi and Am Advisors, weighing in on the economics of the 12th Malaysia Plan. After this, we're going to look at one of the largest sectors of it, which was this idea of inclusion. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bia Fikiran Melayang, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:53. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We've been talking about the 12th Malaysia Plan. To close off, we wanted to look at inclusivity because that's one of the big promises of the plan. Speaking to us on this is Sharon Raj from Parti Socialist Malaysia. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, there is, in the plan itself, a focus on more equitable wealth distribution, and the plan does also make many mentions of inclusivity, ensuring no one gets left behind. Do you think that the plan overall reflects the goal? Is it sufficiently inclusive?
It's definitely no. It's anything but inclusive, actually. When you look at the 12th Malaysia Plan, it has been designed along the racial line. And when you look, it does not really represent our social fabric. It does not represent the kids who are malnutrition under a single mother. It does not talk about rural poverty. It does not talk about how hard some of our workers in factory are, but are still paid at minimum wage. The job insecurity by the young people. You don't talk about the underemployment. You're not talking about unemployment. You're not talking about the lack of infrastructure poverty. When I talk infrastructure poverty, you're talking about inability to access to public transport, inability to get clean drinking water, people who can't afford to pay the electricity bill. So these kinds of multidimensional poverty and inequality are not really captured. And this is exactly our social fabric, which was not captured in the 12th Malaysia Plan. And there was a lot of overemphasis along the racial line. And when you look where this will benefit, it will mostly benefit the upper echelon of each respective racial profile, and it will never trickle down to the overall working class of each respective racial fabric. And what will happen is you will get more what we call inter-ethnic conflict, because everyone's feeling poor and they'll feel that the other ethnic guy is robbing me. But in fact, the entire 12th Malaysia Plan has been focused on racial line, and it only consolidates to the upper echelon.
Sharon, did any of the policies stand out to you as perhaps being able to move the needle at all?
Nothing really that stands out to me when you say it's going to solve something for the next 5 years. In fact, I was expecting some sort of announcement on the increase of the minimum wage. Yes, COVID may have damaged in our economy, but we are definitely on a growth track. And the growth in the last decade was not trickled down because the minimum wage was pulled up. There was no discussion about accessibility to affordable housing. There was no discussion about addressing the overcrowding of hospital. Most of the programs that were announced were merely continuation. So it does not really give nothing really impressive. Even some were talking about the coal power plant. But in fact, many forgotten that it was Pakatan Harapan government in 2019, then Minister Yobinev actually decided there will be no more new coal or diesel power plant announced. So it's actually a re-announcement to a certain extent. And the 2050 climate change goal was actually decided several years ago internally within the government. So a lot of these are actually re-announcement, and nothing of it sounds impressive to me.
So in addressing these issues that you're bringing up then, what would you like to have seen? What policies do you think would have been helpful?
A very helpful policy would have been some sort of increment for the minimum wage should have been put to discussion, or there should have been some clarity. Say in 2022, we will increase the minimum wage. So that would have been clarity across the entire country for businesses to be prepared for the increase of minimum wage, which was not announced. That's one. And then the other thing is to revisit privatization of certain sectors in the country. Some of it is like the hospital contract system for the cleaners, for school teachers. So all of this was actually part of the privatization process. Some of it we were carved out and give out to a middle contract man. And they are actually profiting on top of these working class people. And they are pushed into poverty. Right? And all of these have not actually been captured. I was expecting some sort of solution. There was also no solution to the hospital contract workers for the doctors. There are also teachers, engineers, pharmacists, a lot of people working in the government sector which have been put into contract. And without a fixed work term for them, they could not actually purchase house, they could not purchase car, and all of their purchasing power is actually deprived. And this will actually stall economic growth in the long run and still keep them in poverty. I was expecting some of these issues, which have cropped up over the past 2 years thanks to COVID, to be discussed in the 12th Malaysia Plan, but it was not mentioned at all. So I was quite disappointed in that sense.
We just have 1 minute left, but as someone who works with young people, how do you see this plan resonating with them? Is there enough in the plan that focuses on their needs?
Right. When you look at the young people, there's three things which they need to be addressed. And the young people generation is actually a generation of homeless, jobless, and moneyless. They have PTPTN loan right after graduation, but they are suffering from underemployment or unemployment, and they cannot afford to purchase a house because it's just too expensive because of the commodification of housing property in Malaysia. And until either one of these three is solved, or either one of these three have been provided solution, the young people will not going to get very excited about it. And in fact, I think a lot of the young people would have been disappointed with this 12th Malaysia Plan because it doesn't really touch them. Although there have been talks about we are going to create high-income jobs, we're going to attract high-tech industry and stuff, but none of this actually will resonate with them because they don't see how it's going to benefit them. So unless these three, which is job, housing, and debt, or moneyless is resolved, I don't think the young people are going to get excited. Neither I think anybody will be actually tweeting about it.
Sharon, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
That was Sharon Raj from Parti Socialist Malaysia talking to us about the promise of inclusivity of the 12th Malaysia Plan, which is what we've been discussing this hour. Keep those thoughts coming. This has been Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.